Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
My phone down, so we won't get an echo this time. One percent marginal gains every time, like Clive Woodward said back in 2003. Right, let's do this. Are we going?
We're going.
Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are back in the rugby dungeon. And we're also currently streaming on YouTube, where we have a channel going right there. JB and I have been putting some videos up, and every weekend, as we are here every Sunday night, we're here and live on YouTube. So thank you very much to people watching already. Can I just ask as well, is the sound level okay? Because just checking, politely.
I think it is.
I'm sure we'll see. I'll keep an eye on the messages. But that's JB there.
Hello, Tim.
Sorry, I was dragging you away from a CrossFit WOD video.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of CrossFit WOD videos this week. I'm in CrossFit. I'm going to say CrossFit a lot today. At 6 a.m. tomorrow, and I can't think about anything else.
And Phil, you haven't had your haircut yet?
Not yet.
What are you going to do with it when you do? What are you going to ask for?
I don't know. I feel attached to it. Like every time I've grown a beard, I don't really like having a beard. But then I always feel reluctant to get rid of it.
Almost like you should be waiting for an event to do it.
Yeah,
like a reason.
Exactly. And right now I don't have an event other than I look ridiculous wearing a suit and tie with this hair. With it,
I think it looks kind of cool. I think it looks all right.
It's at the back where it's like dangling down over my shirt collar.
I want to crowdfund for the Exeter Chiefs barber to make a trip to the Northwest.
Wow, yeah. Imagine that.
After his kick, I think we're living in a Johnny Hill universe now. Get his mullet.
Well, didn't he? Yeah. Goodness me.
Unbelievable. What a weekend of rugby we've got to talk about. So good.
And a week of rugby in general, to be fair.
Yeah, absolutely incredible week. There is so much good stuff to talk about. I've been excited about doing this podcast all day because I've just been full of like zest for rugby.
Zesty rugby, love it.
Yeah, genuinely because, and I think it's, so I spent today, took my son Louis to mini rugby and I stood out in the sunshine watching the lads. They had an absolutely awesome time chatting to the parents. And the people you get at rugby clubs are amazing. I just had the best day. Best weekend, which started with Bristol versus Exeter. Incredible game. And then today, I've just had a day at a rugby club in the sunshine, watching a load of under-13s, having an amazing time, standing with the parents, having a laugh. And it's just one of those times.
Right.
When you're around a rugby club again, you just get reminded of the people in rugby are just really special.
Yeah, well, I did something very similar to you. I was at Toc H, went for a beer in the gorgeous sun. Obviously, full social distancing was definitely applied. Very, very cautious. Then went into the wonderful town of Didsbury. A Negroni.
Nice. Did you find somewhere that would serve you a Negroni?
Yes, we did.
Every single bar I've been past is heaving.
Yeah, there is a bar in Didsbury called Head of Steam. I think it's like a chain.
Yeah, like craft ale place, yeah. Generally.
And you can only order one of three things.
Craft ale?
No. The most expensive pint.
Okay.
The Saras pint.
Yeah.
Or the highest IBU pint. That's the same thing, and you've got to draw it out of lots.
Oh, I had something from there that was over 100 IBU, and it was pretty bitter, it's safe to say.
I think with the IBU, it's like the opposite to the Richter scale. Like, the higher the IBUs go, the less of a marginal difference it makes.
I don't know. Like 60, 70, a kind of regular drink, I don't mind it. But the one that I had that was over 100 was...
It
was almost undrinkable.
Yeah.
Well, judging by our Twitter account, and we've had a lot of people who've been having a Negroni in the sunshine.
Well, I had something else too. A friend of the pod, Lorcan, told me to go and buy Lillet Blanc. I think it's called Lilith, something like that.
So Lilette is a little tampon.
Yeah, it is Lilette.
What, is that a new drinking vessel?
It is.
Buffalo tap after you finish.
You absorb the liquid and then dangle it into your mouth.
Just wring it out. Yeah.
It's absolutely delicious. Yes, it is a French aperitif.
Very, very nice.
So I had some of that in the park. Like a homeless person would, I guess.
I'm just going to start the podcast with something. Bear with me, please. Won't take a second. Here we go.
I say that Wayne Barnes didn't give a penalty. He won the ball clearly. That's what he wants. Turnover ball. Let the boys play.
Yes, Hugo!
Hugo.
Hugo. Yes, Hugo.
Welcome aboard, Hugo.
Welcome to the LTBP community, Hugo. Love it. Love it. Where do you want to start? Like, rather than going through the news, I've got it all written down in front of me. I can make sure we weave through all the talking points. But can we talk about Bristol Exeter just to kick off?
Yeah, I think
yes.
Because it was so good.
Yeah. And this was, like, as close to international quality as you'd get from a Premiership game. Certainly in a season without Saracens, it was a really high standard. And we saw why Exeter are so good. Because they nullified what is a superb Bristol team. Attacking threats right across the back line, really well organised pack, good runners. And Bristol team admittedly missing a couple of players, missing Nathan Hughes, missing Randrandra. But
Callum Sheedy.
And Callum Sheedy, of course, with Mullins playing 10. But still a very good Bristol team. And Exeter did ultimately beat them up. Exeter showed their class in this game.
Did you see the Joe Joyce tweet? Straight after the game.
Fair play. They Exeter are nails.
Yes,
yeah.
He summed it up perfectly, didn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely perfectly. I wonder, two things. First of all, is this what international rugby would look like if international rugby was a higher standard? So, international rugby is the higher standard, but because those teams are together less frequently and they have less chance to work on the combinations and how the style of play and all the rest of it, that the club that they play a more physical brand, because the physical rugby is the easiest way to win a game. So if you only have limited time together with big men, what are you going to do? You're going to try and get over the game. And it seemed that these two teams were doing that, but they're maybe 5% off that international quality physicality because they have other things to do as well. Maybe the way to reduce physicality in international rugby is to have them together for longer.
For more time. And actually a kind of piece of evidence that would support that would be look at Japan.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Japan, they had a huge period of time together, both before 2015 and the 2019 World Cups, which they did exceptionally well at. And now, they did play a less physical brand of rugby. What's the biggest contributing factor to that? Is it the fact that they had all the time together and therefore they could hone all those skills? Or is it the fact that they, on average, have a smaller team and a smaller pack, and they have to work on the other stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, and I would say that because it isn't that Japan went, well, we could match them physically, but let's try something different.
Yeah.
Well, if you can beat someone, well, and that's almost what happened in this game, which was Exeter were like, well, we can do it your way for a little bit, see how that works out. That worked out fine. Now let's do it our way, and everything tightened up, and it shows the variety of ways that Exeter can play. And Bristol just aren't quite there yet. They remind me a lot of a team like Exeter from a few years ago, learning how to win these big games. And I didn't see all of the... what's the game they played against the French team?
Toulon? Bordeaux.
Bordeaux.
Didn't see all that game, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was the same approach which Bordeaux took against them, which was big, physical. And once they don't win physically, they really struggle with their shapes out wide. And when they struggle with their shapes out wide, well, what do they have left?
So, yeah, against Bordeaux's defence... So they were very physical and their defence was excellent and really well drilled.
As was Exeter. Exeter's defence was incredible. Like, if you actually look at where Bristol scored and how deadly they are, it took unbelievable levels of individual skill to cross Exeter's try line.
Oh, completely. Completely.
That's the only way Bristol could, which is the highest praise you can give to Exeter, well, I think. That it needed Charles Piatow, ridiculous, outrageous... game-breaking talents.
It needed something which you can't coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Uren try was a little bit of that, where it was, he was basically tackled but stayed on his feet and then steps and accelerates away.
And also from a break Piatow made from inside his own 22.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I was thinking that their first try was an intercept. It wasn't. It was a phenomenal try by Euron.
Yeah.
It was scrum inside their own 22. Piatow bursts up the left-hand side, brings in Adiolokan, back to Piatow. He gives it to Euron. Amazing finish from Euron.
So a guy who I think would have made a material difference to this scoreline is Nathan Hughes. And I don't often say that. I don't think Nathan Hughes is the most high-end eight, but he does get them over that game line.
He does.
And everything would have become a lot more fruitful for them should they have that little bit more time to play with and a little bit more go-forward ball for their shapes.
And he's huge as well, which helps when you're playing against Exeter.
Tends to help. Anthony Jempson on the live chat has said, and this is an amazing stat, and hi Ed as well, he said, yeah, glad to see Tim got the shorts memo this week. Yeah, I did. Anthony Jempson says, 50 minutes before Exeter gave away a penalty.
Wow.
And also, I've mentioned in the last few weeks about... he's getting a charger for the Mevo, so we don't cut out, I think.
Hopefully.
Okay. No, I've mentioned this a few times recently, how broadcasters, BT Sport included, stopped using the ball in play statistic because it is just quite an embarrassing statistic in a lot of cases.
Mm.
That's still the case within the game. However, the ball in play time, because of Ali Yeakin's picture of the stats on his screen at the end of the match, the commentator, the ball in play time of 41 minutes in this game is huge.
Which is huge compared to often 26 to 32 minutes generally.
Yeah.
So
a massive improvement. And part of that, and I think also the reason for the penalty count, is part of that is Wayne Barnes lets stuff go where he can.
Yes.
Lets the boys play. And also Wayne Barnes is absolutely amazing at being a proactive referee, using words efficiently to stop him needing to blow the whistle. Some people would say he's a bit loose. I love it.
Yeah, and that there was an interesting debate. JB, I think when you interviewed JP Doyle,
yes,
about how much coaching a referee should do, because they've got to give enough information for the players to be able to make a decision so the game flows. Because if you don't tell them anything, they're just going to keep infringing when they shouldn't do. But you can't give too much, because certainly if you're doing it more to one team than the other, you're actually giving an unfair advantage to one team. You're preventing them from having enough penalties. And I think Barnsley does it just about right. He's incredibly clear, incredibly concise, and he does it at the right times to give the players enough information to be able to make a decision whether to continue or stop. And if they continue, their fault, it's a penalty. And if they play on, or if they do stop, it's play on for the boys, let the boys play.
Indeed, yeah. I thought he did well. I thought he did very, very well.
One thing that happened today in the Wasps-Bath game is, and it made me think again back to Friday night and just why Wayne Barnes has been the best ref in the world for, you know, a decade now. He chooses when things have a material effect. There was one penalty that was given against Bath where it was for going off your feet at a ruck when no Wasp player was attacking the ruck. And actually, whether the Bath player was on his feet or not made no difference to who was going to win that ruck. Didn't deny Wasp an opportunity. And that's the sort of stuff that Wayne Barnes just says, fine.
Yeah,
doesn't make a material difference, crack on.
And I've said it a million times, if you don't go up in the line out, there can't be a knock straight.
It shouldn't be a knock straight. Yeah. Or it should have to be so
outside of the
straight.
Outside shoulder.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm really happy with both of those, because it frustrates you so much as a fan watching a game. A team's got attacking ball, there's a minor indiscretion at a ruck that is technically an indiscretion in line with the laws, but again, has no material effect. We should just let the boys play.
Yeah.
Right,
here's a question. Who was Gatland there to see most at Ashton Gate on Friday night?
Right. Call me a mental conspiracy theorist.
We often do.
Yes. Feel free to file this under Eddie Jones's political dual nationality selections.
We'll have to, it's not QAnon anymore. JB Anon.
JB Anon. I think he is going to take Simmons. I am convinced. Johnny Hill's got to go, right? Johnny Hill has to go, because Johnny Hill...
No.
Locks are stacked.
He's
Locks
not
are
going.
So they're stacked.
Not, no, so I've been looking at the numbers that he took. He took five locks to New Zealand.
Who are your best locks?
Marrow.
Yeah.
Alan Wynn.
Uh-huh.
James Ryan,
possibly. Tyde Byrne would be one of the ones that's either or.
I would have both James Ryan and Tyde Byrne.
James Ryan and Tyde Byrne. Hendo. is in with a shout.
What's Hendo's size? Because he's like a back row, second row, isn't he?
But Hendo's
big. He's just got like mute strength. He looks like a giant baby, but he's got like
Courtney's got to go.
Well, I would, but his fitness could be an issue. I would take Courtney.
Of course he's going to go.
I would have taken.
Don't hear it.
I would have taken Joe Launchbury, but heartbreakingly, it looks like he's injured. I think, and
I would have taken Chris Worry in the country.
And we're already up to about eight there.
No.
So there's no chance Johnny Hill's going.
Well, I think he is because he's a big man, and they need big locks. So
Adam Beard as well could be a contender.
He's off to Australia.
Is
Adam Beard? Sorry, no.
Jake Ball is off to Australia.
Yeah.
Complete fake news. Johnny Hill played well.
He did. Johnny Hill's a great player.
He's an option at 10.
He played well.
Hold on.
He played well against Bristol.
But he's very good.
No, he's very good. He at times was not great for England. At times he was very good for England. But this is why I'm so heartbroken for Joe Launchbury, because he was the England's best player by a mile in the autumn.
So he missed
out on the Six Nations.
I was talking to two players about tight headlocks today.
Right?
I won't tell you who the first player is because he's still playing. And the second player doesn't play. And I can tell you, I was talking to James Haskell about this, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I wasn't even aware that was really a thing.
We need to get the bell back. Ding!
Yeah. He's like, yeah, me. I was like, yeah, me too. But it definitely is a thing. So Morrow is about the same size as Courtney.
So Morrow's a relatively light.
Yeah, they're not big. And that's why they play...
Mate, I've stood next to him. I know it's all relative. Ebenezerbeth. I get it.
They're not that big. Tad Byrne, not that big.
No. Nope.
Yeah. Which is why you could see those being taken... Those three specifically, Morrow, Courtney and Tad Byrne, being taken as a six/second row.
Yeah.
Because they are big for sixes.
And then you've got... you got Henderson, who is actually a bigger lad, but again, he's a
18 and a half stone.
Yeah, so then you're looking at Launchbury. Well, he could be done. Johnny Hill's massive.
Johnny Hill's not going.
Gray, I think Gray's an excellent player. Does lots of hard work. But
I don't think either of the extra locks are going
to
go.
Yeah, but Johnny Hill does seem to outplay Johnny Gray. But is that because Johnny Gray is allowing Johnny Hill to play?
There's a bit of that. Because
maybe
the way that Exeter shape up, you quite often find one of their locks and one of their back rows always in the 15 channel, and Johnny Gray doing all his work just hitting rucks and hitting tackles all day long in between the 15s.
I mean, you could do worse than taking the Exeter pairing en masse. And then you've got James Ryan again, not a massive lock.
Yeah, I think of him as being big because he is tall. He's 6'8", but he's not. I've just looked him up. He's 116 kilos, so a touch over 18
so
stone.
So Ezebeth is about 125, and as is Lude. They're not even bigger than that. I mean, they're just enormous. And then you've got Peter Steptoe-Toy. Oof.
Well, this is part of the reason I said who's Gatlin there to see most.
Oh, yeah, sorry, so I've not actually answered that.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Sam Simmons.
Well, yeah, you say that.
I think he will be looking at Sam Simmons.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's going to pick him.
Yeah.
He will be looking at, well, they said, 54 players on the first coaching discussion, something like that. They'll be looking at more players than that. Because there are so many players who could.
Agreed, but this is where the conspiratorial thing comes in.
I think
he's done it, or he's going to do it. Effectively to show up Eddie Jones. I think there is like a personal battle going on. And he's going to say, look, I'm going to take this guy on Lions tour. So when Simmons comes back, Eddie Jones is going to have one hell of a conundrum. Like, well, Sam Simmons started as a Lion, so why can't you start him in the England team?
With Jamie George 4 years ago, didn't he?
Yeah.
Jamie George wasn't starting England hooker when he went with the Lions.
And then he's going to put all sorts of pressure on Jones.
Unless it backfires and goes terribly like Sam Simmons against France a few years. Was it against France?
It was
the Six Nations game where he was.
Did he start at seven or did he come off the bench?
He started about two or three games in that Six Nations championship. He looked awesome against Italy.
Yeah,
and then
he got a hat-trick
against. And then he got his pants pulled down against France. Now, I love Sam Simmons, right?
Yeah,
I think he's absolutely brilliant. Explosive. His work rate is incredible. And in that Exeter team, they play a game and slot him in a way that makes the very best of the talents that he has. But if we're talking back rows and we're talking number eights and we're talking going up against South Africa, you already mentioned Peter Steptoe-Toy. I'll add in Dwayne Vermaelen and Eben Etzebeth and stuff. Just think back a couple of weeks and Jack Conan bullied Sam Simmons. Now, I'm not saying Sam Simmons is not an outstanding player. He is. But if I was looking at that, which is even closer to test level, Leinster v Exeter was even closer to test level than Bristol Exeter. Like, Sam Simmons was up against, and no disrespect to these guys, they're outstanding professionals, Jake Heenan, Dan Thomas. Whereas he's going to be up against Dwayne Vermaelen, Peter Steftatoit.
It's going to be difficult.
And Khaleesi.
And Khaleesi.
Well, you're getting into the realms of Hamish Watson territory here, aren't you? Which is one hell of a player. But if, like, I know this might be a bit of an obsession now, looking at the weights of locks. But if you are going to have smaller guys man for man, you're going to have to try and make it the weight somewhere with a bigger average. You're going to have to up your average somehow. And I don't see how Simmons fits into that, same as Hamish Watson. So even if you have three locks with one sitting at six, you're still probably a bit smaller than the South Africans.
Yeah, and the size thing, though, it can become an obsession. And like I do tend to think of it, but if you look at, say, the last 10 years of the Rugby Championship, I think South Africa might have won it once. New Zealand have won it 7 or 8 times out of that 10. And they're consistently giving away a significant margin in weight in the pack.
But to link it into something I said earlier on, when you're the Lions and you don't have time to work on your combinations, like New Zealand pull all their players from 5 different teams. They mostly know each other. They get a lot of time together. That's how the whole system is set up for New Zealand. They can play lots of different ways. The Lions have got 6 weeks to work out a way to play. And the easiest way to play is brute physical strength.
Or just pick everyone from one team.
Or pick Leinster, which they could nearly do.
Yeah. Well, pick everyone from Leinster and Exeter.
I guess my point on Sam Simmons wasn't to sort of say Sam Simmons can't or shouldn't be selected. It was more to say, and picking up on the fact there are so many locks, that there's going to be some outstanding players not taken. I would say, in terms of pure form, both Six Nations and Heineken Champions Cup, Jack Conan. I mean,
why not?
All I'm saying is, like, yes, it's very easy for us with our, you know, watching the Gallagher Premiership every week and seeing how good Sam Simmons is going. Well, Sam Simmons is going. I guess I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't selected. I think, of course, he'll be considered, but if he wasn't selected, and the reason I asked who was Gatland there to see, I think the person he was there to see most, Luke Cowan-Dickie, and we know he loves Jack Noll.
Luke
Cowan-Dickie, I think
he's
on the plane.
I think he's Exeter's most important player.
What did
he sets the tone so much.
Pat Lamb spoke a bit about Simmons in his press conference this week.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he said basically the thing that impresses him, all the praise he had for Sam Simmons, is not that he's not selected, it's that how he reacts to not being selected week in, week out.
I think
there is something to that.
Yeah, there definitely is. You want to see that reaction because it does, it sets the tone, it sets the character. Because if someone throws the toys out of the pram and says, oh, I'm off to France, that's one reaction.
That's a great shout, you know.
If you knuckle down and work even harder, then...
Oh, that's a great shout. And if you were going away for 6 weeks and you knew you wanted someone that was going to take, you know, the old Rudyard Kipling thing, somebody meets with triumph and disaster and meets those two imposters the same. That's like Sam Simmons brings that to life, doesn't he?
Can I just talk about...
Very much in the mould of Rob Baxter, I might add.
I just want to talk about a thing which I found today. This is a little bit off on tangent. Have you read Charlie Morgan's article? It was a few weeks ago now, I think, about Eddie Jones in Reds.
I saw you post this, and how much you love it because it's so scathing of Eddie Jones.
It's not the scathing. It's just like the story. Yeah. Like I love the complexity of Eddie Jones. You've got to hand him that. He's a novel character, and it's a wonderful, wonderful piece. It's a long old read though, so get yourself a coffee. I think it might be behind a paywall actually, but I think the paywall, buying the paywall for the Telegraph for that alone is worth it. It's absolutely superb.
Just quickly on Exeter and tying in with the Lions. You remember how we used to call Connor Murray Mini Mike?
Yes.
Because he was like a slightly smaller version of Mike Phillips.
Slightly less handsome too.
Jack Noll is like Mini Marla.
Mini Marla.
I do know what you mean.
So I always thought that he is almost like Jack Noll, Sam Simmons and Stuart Hogg. They're sort of related in some way, aren't they?
They're very similar. Depths, heights,
weights. What weights get that? Like the Exeter, the classic Exeter rump
depth.
And the depth. Bodies. Is it just deadlifting for days?
There'll be lots of deadlifts. There'll be lots of big compound lifts. Lots of
all the time, every day.
Yeah, lots of bench, chins, shoulder press, military press, and lots of legs.
Doing your team meetings whilst doing deadlifts.
Yeah.
Team meeting during rest.
Yeah.
Like, you know how like Native American retreats or whatever, they'll pass a little... Or just at, like, team-building, communication expert type things, they'll, oh, we'll hand the baton to you, and that means you can talk. When you talk at Exeter, you have to deadlift.
Keeps it very brief and to the point. Very concise communication.
Maybe not with those boys.
Yeah,
they
love
it. Huge, powerful rumps.
Yeah. Well, the show about this game is it didn't really matter, I don't think. Anyone think it mattered?
Yeah.
It matters to get top spot.
Absolutely.
Because Bristol were quite a long way. They were 10 or 12 points clear.
I think Bristol still...
Those two definitely get top two. Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, I think you're probably right, but this is why it really mattered, is Exeter are only 4 points ahead of Sale.
And they just... only 1 point ahead of Harlequins.
And they just...
3 points ahead of Sale.
So, sorry, they're three points ahead of Sale, and they just won that game. So, had Exeter lost, they're looking at a last five games going, oh, we really might not get a home semi-final.
But, on the other hand, Exeter are clearly the best team in the competition. That's the other thing. So, if they're 3 points ahead of Sale... So what? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you see how that might have made a difference if
if they
finish third and they have to go away to Sale in a semi-final. That's a big difference. Fans will be back by that point.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
All of us. All of them. All of them.
So, well, this is it. So, yes, I understand your point. And I think the Premiership, unfortunately, there is an element of this right now where we've got five teams gunning for four spots. But that is wide open. A couple of surprise losses... Sale nearly came close to losing this weekend. A loss where they're not expecting it, and any of those teams can drop out. Even Exeter. I don't think that will happen, but it could. And had Exeter lost at Ashton Gate, they're right in the mix with Northampton or Quinns being able to overtake them and Sale.
Yeah, maybe. But I just don't think they're losing. That's the thing. Like, I think they're so good. They are sort of they had everything under control in my mind. Whereas I'm not convinced that Sale or Harlequins have everything under control.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that point. And with Exeter this year, they've got a squad that is built to be able to fight on two fronts. They showed they can do it last year. They're actually not having to do it this year because of that loss to Leinster. Their entire focus will be on winning another Premiership.
It is a shame that the Premiership is not a little bit closer this year. Because if you notice, obviously all of the teams are out of the European competitions now. Which means they have 2 weeks break, 2 weeks break.
Bath and Leicester aren't, but Challenge Cup.
The Challenge Cup. And this means that everyone now is going full bore for the rest of the season. There is no rotation, there is no messing about. Everyone is going to be full strength from now until the season finishes. And if it's a little bit tighter, we'd have some absolutely cracking weekends coming up.
Yeah, if it was tighter. If there was relegation... Yeah. It just feels like certainly anyone who can't get top six now is immaterial.
You've got three leagues within a league now. You've got the top five going for four spots.
Yep.
Then you've got that sixth place Champions Cup spot, which the next four teams can challenge for.
Yeah, Irish, Bath, Tigers, Wasps.
Yeah, one of those will get that. I mean... Unless you're a supporter of those teams, I don't think you're not watching the game going, oh, I'm really going to see how this shakes down in the battle for sixth place.
Yeah.
Unless you're a fan of one of those teams.
You might actually be saying, do we have the squad right now to be competing?
Yeah, I tell you what, like, on that, if you're a fan thing, I remember being at Sale, not as a fan, but working.
You're working, of course.
And I think they lost. Maybe they lost to Leicester, but they had their... Basically, all of their new signings out. And it depended on La Rochelle, where they finished up.
Oh, yeah.
But waiting for that European... I think they qualified in seventh, but for Europe, maybe?
Yeah, because Exeter gave the Premiership an extra... Was it
Gloucester won the Challenge Cup?
Yeah.
There was something, but...
Yeah, the Premiership got an extra slot.
It was like... Yeah, because La Rochelle did something the week before. But the fact that they ended up seventh when waiting for the results to come in, it was like the Oscars had been won. It was like a palpable sense of anticipation in the media room waiting for, yes, we're into Europe now. So it does matter to some people.
Did Dimes run in and pop the bubbles?
No, he bought in. Who did he bring in? First time I've ever seen it. He brought John O'Ross into the press room.
I remember Oh, I was there when he announced for the following season Jono Ross was going to be captain.
I'm sure that was the same.
I can't remember. I remember that, thinking, this is a little bit. There was still like a game or two to go, wasn't there? Or
no, that was.
Was that the final game?
The most professional man in all of rugby.
In all of rugby.
One of the highest rates of yellow card and red cards in all of rugby.
Is that right?
This season, he seems
not Dylan Hartley levels. Come on.
Game. Maybe not Dylan Hartley. Maybe not the older Northampton. David Pace.
Callum, former Northampton. Again, Northampton.
Callum Clark.
Callum Clark. Yeah. Well, the in the Leicester game, there was an interesting stat today that they've had more than 4 hours of rugby this season in the Premiership, a man down.
That's because behaviours are changing, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
because,
if you have four hours of man down, maybe behaviours aren't changing. Maybe we should stop the whole thing. Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe people would say changing behaviour or stupid. Maybe.
Maybe some people like incentives.
Yeah, exactly.
But that, I just thought that was really interesting. It's the equivalent of 24 yellow cards. Now, I know some of them have been red cards, which is obviously extended periods of time, but it's a long time to be playing a man down.
It's hamstringing teams. It's hamstringing coaches. And it just goes on and on. I really dislike the way the card's been handed out at the moment. Anyway, enough of that.
And on the Premiership, just to sort of wrap that up, we've got the three teams at the bottom. And again, actually, I'm going to quickly jump. I want to get Phil's thoughts on one thing. I will say, we're not on this podcast per se going to discuss ring fencing, refer back to the Football European Super League and map it onto rugby. We're not going to do that. But what I will say is JB and I have both done that and covered off all potential angles of all of those things on our YouTube channel.
Every angle.
So if you haven't already, please hit subscribe on YouTube and then fill your boots watching those videos. But we haven't heard sort of what Phil... So just briefly, Phil, what did... You sort of touched on it there. It's the we're seeing now the impact that no relegation this season is having on the interesting games, but... Just this last week, it's sort of been a talking point. So, write a reply from Phil.
Well, I've been enjoying your videos. I really enjoyed your Darren Childs ones, actually.
We'll get into that later.
Some good stuff in that. On the ring fencing, I think, and JB said this a few times, not just in videos in the week, but in the past, there is a way to ring fence. You can do it. Look at other successful leagues that do ring fencing. However, you've got to think it through, and you can't just click your fingers, change the structure of a league from a competitive relegation league to a ring fence league and expect everything to stay consistent, because you change the incentives for the teams using that word again. And one of the incentives for that would be to for those teams would be, well, you can actually start turning a profit simply by tanking your team.
Yeah,
like you, there is no incentive for you to be putting out the best team week on week, because you've got the big TV deal, the TV money, which is disproportionate to your gate receipts. If you minimise the cost of your squad, you will just make more money. You'll improve your bottom line. Now, that is a rather cynical way to think about it, and I'm not suggesting that's what's going to happen, but there is a real risk of getting a massively lopsided and uncompetitive league if you start ring fencing, and that's something that. I mean, we spoke about it on our ring fencing podcast. Mm. That is something that really needs some very serious consideration, because there's many ways you can try and square that circle. If you do nothing, if you just continue with the status quo, it will make the league a worse product.
Yeah, I am certain, I'm certain that the next measure to come in is going to be minimum salary cap spend. I think it's going to be about 60% of the cap, which is not enough.
Yeah, I'd agree. That's not enough.
But at least it's a start, and I'm certain that will be happening.
Well, Phil just mentioned the ring fencing special, where we very pragmatically, rather than just saying we don't want it or we do want it, we actually said here's what you need to do to make it work. And believe me, people are listening to us.
A few people are listening.
People are listening, and so go and check that one out, and check out the videos on YouTube. It was interesting you were just saying that, Phil. As you were talking, I was thinking about the few years I spent teaching, and I was just thinking, I won't name any names. There were some
Mr. Roberts.
I mean, but we you can all remember this from being a student. There were some dreadful teachers, and you just
oh yeah,
you don't. They will never get rid of them.
I got in trouble the other day.
Go on.
So I did an interview as of you, and apparently you will be doing one too.
Yeah, I need to get you. Yeah. The guy behind it has asked for you specifically as well.
So there's a podcast called, I want to say Right in the Schoolies, is that right? Is it in the Schoolies?
Right in the Schoolies.
Yeah, and it's interviews with various people, one of which was myself.
Mm.
And one of which was you, Tim. Has that been released?
Not yet. No, he's keeping our ones, you know, a little bit separate, because he doesn't want to, you know, wants to keep his power to dry a bit.
Yeah. So, he interviewed me, and this went out, and I got approached by my old headmaster to say, "Hang on a minute, you shouldn't be saying these things about the school." And this is my thought. I was like, "I've not really said anything." I mean, the only thing I said bad really was the bit when we broke into the school after a night out and had a few drinks. But it wasn't bad. But it was bad enough to get a reprimand. From my old...
You're still getting reprimanded from the headmaster.
Old headmaster. It's unbelievable.
But on your point,
and
about
by the way, it's a very, very good. Very, very good rugby school now. Probably the best rugby school definitely North Wales, maybe even in Wales. Phenomenal program.
Wow.
Yeah.
I get the point I was saying is when you said you can tank a league, it was like, yeah, God, when you're a teacher, you get paid another grand every year, regardless of how dreadful or amazing you are. So it actually reduces the incentive to go, I'm really going to put the work in here.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, and you've got to avoid that, because the Premiership historically has been a brilliant league because it's been so competitive. And actually, one of the things that happened over the last few years, Saracens cheating the system, it's not the only thing, but that in part drove them to being so successful and winning so many league titles. If they hadn't have been gaming the system, I suspect you would see a history that is even more competitive than it actually was, i.e., Wasps might have won that year that they got very close, or Bath might have won the year they got very close.
Because some of the wins that Saracens have had, I think Saracens would still be incredibly successful.
I totally agree. Yeah, that is not the only thing.
And I just want to, again, we've made the point so many times, but I just make the point that the stars above their badge for Europe
are legitimate
100%, because I'm telling you, Leinster and French teams have budgets way higher than anything Saracens ever spent.
But some of the margins in those finals are razor thin.
Yeah.
Particularly
absolutely.
The one against Exeter, the most recent one against Exeter, and against Wasps as well.
Yeah.
So they're all... Yeah, so they might not have won those. But ultimately, they might have.
The other way that's skewed it is catching up on a little bit of Ealing and Saracens today. Saracens handily beat them. However, Ealing are legitimately a good team. And if it was a team like, for example, Worcester... down in the Championship,
that would not
be a foregone conclusion in the way that it is this year.
Yeah,
100%.
I've got to talk about Worcester, because that was the most interesting press conference of the week by a country mile.
Midweek one.
Yeah, so midweek, they all did their press conferences, but I did Bristol, Exeter, Bath, Leicester. I'm becoming an absolute hussy for these things, right? Because it's just on Zoom calls. And Worcester. Worcester was by far the most interesting, because the job that Jonathan Thomas has to do is enormous.
And they've had news this week of Nick Davids going to Quinns, and in the rugby paper today, Nick Shunnett going to Sale Sharks.
Yeah. So, obviously those have gone. That's a big, big loss. And Jonathan Thomas is talking about why can't the players not show that they care enough on the field, which is quite a startling thing to say. He did then clarify, say, no, what I meant is, why can't they translate how much they care onto...
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Right.
But
which is quite a different phrasing, quite a different statement.
Yeah, but it's worth further investigation. He's lost 20 players this year. It's his first head coach job. He's been there for 2 months, and he has comfortably the hardest job of any director of rugby in the entire league. And he's probably got the least experience too. So my worry is going to be, if I'm a Worcester fan, I'm not going to put up with much more disappointment for longer. And he's very, very excited about all of these new signings coming up next year, because they've got some good players, right? But how good is Duane van der Merwe if you don't have a pack?
I
understand that props, that there's some significant prop signings are going to be announced.
Who do you reckon it could be?
I don't want to say.
Do you have an inkling?
I've heard stuff, but I'm not going to say anything.
Have you? I've heard nothing, right? Yeah. So I know absolutely nothing. All I'm going to say is there's a massive Irish prop that's not signed his contract yet.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't possibly be him, could it? I mean, that would be like the most enormous move I could remember. That might be the biggest move. Might even be bigger than Charles Pearsall's move, that, genuinely.
So a certain potato-fancying yeah. Irish tight head prop.
Yeah, that would be the biggest move since Carl Heyman.
To Newcastle, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it might be that important. If or, they did it...
As big as, because the speaking of tight head props, the Sinclair move from Quinns to Bristol, that's yeah. a hell of a steal.
Bristol don't need Sinclair. Whereas... Yeah.
Well, yeah, they don't need him in the same way. Well, yeah, yeah, quite yeah, right.
Not in the same way.
Like, Carl Heyman literally won games for Newcastle because he'd win the scrum penalties and then yeah. Gopeth could kick him. I think it was a Gopeth at the time. Might have been.
Yeah.
Was there a crossover with Wilkinson? Maybe there must have been a crossover with Wilkinson.
Yeah, maybe yeah. it was Wilkinson rather than Gopeth.
Yeah, but either way.
Yeah, so he
Wilkinson was, and Floody,
yeah,
probably.
They were just banging over penalties because... Now, it's slightly different because Heyman could play a lot more than Byrne could probably play because, well, front row is a different animal now and you need to rotate more. But what a signing. I mean, if that... I made this up. We don't know it is him. But if it was him, my word, that'd be amazing.
And to be clear, I've made absolutely no comment. Yeah. Just that's all I'm saying. But on Worcester, so this is... We can talk about the game. They actually played well against Sale and pushed them very, very close and could have won. And that's to their credit. And I think Jonathan Thomas will come away from that game, bearing in mind what you said he said in midweek, feeling a bit better. However, touching on what Phil said about the lack of relegation... Actually, losing in such a sort of dramatic, close fashion at home, it's just a shame that we weren't seeing players in tears, because that would have been basically I think, we're probably staring down the barrel of relegation. Rather, yeah, actually, at the end of the game, they went, oh, we did really well. That was a good effort.
Yeah, and just on the back.
And just one final thing in that context, Worcester, two of their victories that they've chalked up are COVID victories. So they are, after 17 games, this is the reality. They are, as it stands, not saying it will finish this way, but they are, as it stands, the worst Premiership team since the second London Welsh. The first London Welsh were better than Worcester.
Difficult, isn't it? Difficult. But there again, if you want them to be better, I mean, obviously spend a year in the Championship and come back up and spend some real money, of course. But they do need a long term to invest. If I was a Worcester fan, I'd be really worried, because even with all the new players, they're going to take time to settle in. What they remind me of is a really bad version of Sale. When Sale bought in all their players, at least they had a way to win. Worcester don't have that. Now, Sale went, as did Saracens, actually, they went down the path of increasing the quality within your squad, because I think that's the first step when you're building a squad, isn't it? You've got to increase the quality. Once that quality increases, you can then get mid-range talent for cheaper. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
You can't get mid-range... Now, their mid-range talent is going to cost them a fortune, because
no one wants to go
to Worcester.
And if their mid-range talent costs them a fortune, their high-end talent...
Yeah.
Huhard and Tio a few years ago, Milani Nanai now, will cost them the earth
exactly.
to get them there.
But that's what you've got to do now. This is the horrible thing about being rubbish at rugby. You've then got to spend a fortune on a handful of players to drag you up. And only once you're up... can you then start spending less money on middle-range players?
And the other side of it is, you can create the best talent in the world, and they've got...
Nick Davis came through their academy,
yeah.
gone to Quinns, age 22.
And do you know why?
Nick David looks he looks flipping amazing. He's quality.
Do you know why? Because they wouldn't say... This is the official line. They wouldn't give him time at fullback. They say, well, we can't guarantee you time at fullback, whereas Quinns can. What? If he's good enough, you guarantee him time at fullback, don't you?
Shilcock did look class there, and they got Nanai.
I mean, you want to be keeping young English talent like that. The other two that I do hope they keep, because it will mean they're a considerably stronger team, two really good players in Ted Hill and Ollie Lawrence. Yeah. They are quality young English talent who have come through Worcester.
The answer is yes. They have
to keep those guys.
Well, Ted Hill's captain now, isn't he?
He is.
And Ollie Lawrence's got to stay there. But at some point, the draw of winning stuff elsewhere is going to get to them. So,
well, that was one thing, again, to go back to Bristol just very briefly. But I mentioned it when I came back from Aix-en-Provence for that final against Toulon. And Dave Atwood really emotionally after the game going, that's the first trophy I've ever won.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Age 33 was at the time.
Yeah, and 33 and, what, 20 to 30 England caps as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not like he's a 33-year-old kind of journeyman, average player, he has been a quality one of the best locks in the Premiership
for
over a decade.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be watching Worcester very closely because I think they're fascinating.
Well, but the only other talking point for Worcester, other than breaking into the game, which I know you will have watched, JB, is what's gone on with Wasps posting. Okay, so let me back up. Round 19, 2 weeks' time, three weekends' time.
Yeah.
Because that's when the restrictions get relaxed even more and crowds will be allowed back to Premiership grounds, 11 out of 12 Premiership clubs, as I understand it, I may be wrong on the 11 out of 12, but I believe I'm right, 11 out of the 12 Premiership clubs have said, absolutely, let's shift our games from the weekend to Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, or Monday or Tuesday, I think, basically.
Yeah.
So that it can be past the date and fans can come back in.
Love it.
Because they'll only have, by that point, there'll be three games left after that. So maximum two home games for any side. So let's make the use of one of them and get fans back in, because it's been over a year by that point. Please. 11 out of 12 Premiership clubs have gone with it. Worcester said no to moving it from the Saturday to the Monday. Reason being is Worcester have said that they have got a rest week booked in that week. And the reason why it's important that I say this, I looked into this.
Six games to go, rest week.
So Worcester...
there'll be three games.
There'll be
two games after that.
There'll be three games after that. The final three games before the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And Worcester have said they've told the players they were having a week off, so they won't move it to the Monday. I think this is a major own goal by Worcester, and as awkward as it might have been to get the odd player to change plans, or because there's no relegation, worst case scenario, you say to someone, well, okay, well, you have that week off and we'll do without you.
Yeah.
So in a few cases, if it was really important. So
and it doesn't actually matter Worcester.
The only thing I'd say, it's in their credit that they're still trying to win games. And if the logic here is, it's not their home game, is it? They're away at Wasps.
Exactly, So
they don't want the Wasps fans in.
Yeah, but that is
think
really...
about the last year.
I'd do it. I'm not here to do Wasps favours.
I think it's a really bad look.
But you know what? Have a week off. It doesn't matter.
Well, but I looked into this because I wanted to have all the facts and not be unfair, because some people will say, oh, player welfare, you've got to think about that. 3 weeks after that will be the end of the season. Also, in January, Worcester had three empty weekends,
mm-hmm.
COVID. In February, they had a free weekend. In March, they had no rest weeks, but they had the first 2 weeks of April with no game.
Yeah, cause, and they're not in Europe.
They're not in Europe. So they've played
weekends.
They've played two Prem games this weekend and last. Then they've got a rest week now. Then they play two more games. Then they've got a rest week. Then three games. Then the end of the season. And they're then blocking out a rest week rather than moving a game 48 hours. I think it's an awful look.
Given how stretched every club's finances are at the moment because of not having fans in for so long, I do think it's really bad luck.
And even not the finances, the emotional bond with fans.
Yeah.
The one thing that's been missing from our sport for the last year. And, you know, let's not forget, a lot of fans at clubs donated the refund on their season ticket to the club to try and help them out. I just think, I mean, I'm sure they think they're doing the right thing, but I can't help thinking that they, I mean, the fact that 11 out of the 12 clubs have done something different, if that is the case, says everything to me.
Yes, it does. It's not a good look.
No.
Hmm. I'm okay with it. so the game, Sale Sharks game. Sale Sharks are winning games, which they, you know, this is sometimes teams win games that they shouldn't win, and sometimes teams get very lucky on a run, and that is almost like a sign, like the New England Patriots when they win their first Super Bowl. They just
are you saying it's going to be?
I don't think Sale Sharks have an issue with the bigger physical teams. I actually think they would relish playing someone like Exeter again. I don't think it's a problem for them.
Yeah.
I think where they slip up is where people start trying to play lots and lots of rugby. And the weird one about this is they started shipping points. They don't normally do that unless it's La Rochelle. so it was a good win, because I actually said on one of my videos that, yeah, that's a foregone conclusion. Well, I was wrong, because Worcester are still scrapping. They are. They did put out a big team, and as someone pointed out to me on Twitter, Sale don't play well on plastic pitches. For whatever reason it is, they just don't. So to get through this and rotate your team, because of all of the sides playing this weekend, the only team which might have needed a bit of rotation would have been Sale. Because after that, they've got, I think, Northampton, Leicester, I think they've got Bristol and Exeter coming up.
So Sale's, I was just going to point to Sale's last two games. Quins at home, Exeter away.
Yeah.
Massive!
Quins. They will lose against Quins. Mm. They'll beat Exeter. That's what I think.
Ooh. Well, that's in line with what you said. I think... Well, let's see how they're going up until that point. I'm not sure I agree with that right now.
Yeah, in fact, Sale, home to Leicester, away to Bath, home to Bristol, home to Quins, away to Exeter. That is tough.
Yes.
If they had have slipped up against Worcester, they're staring down the barrel at missing out on top four.
Yeah.
Big time.
Well, that's not the important fixture list, in my opinion. Northampton's is the important fixture list.
I think I mentioned this last week.
Yeah.
How they got a very favourable one.
Oh, crikey. That looks a bit tasty. So, I actually think Sale should be all right. The one which is tricky will be Quins. I think that Leicester match up with them okay. I think even Bristol match up with them fine. I think they can handle Bristol. They can handle Exeter. Just.
Mm.
But, you know, what a way to shape your season.
The old footballing kind of analogy was when Man United were winning everything under Alex Ferguson, they would win games when they had a relatively weakened team out and were playing poorly. So not just they had, you could win games with a weaker team playing well, or you can win games with your best team playing poorly, but you combine the two and still win games. And Sale, to their credit, they did, and this was a weakened Sale team, and they did not play well, and they still won.
Yeah. Watch out for this Finn Smith lad, Worcester, by the way. 18 years old, playing in the Premiership. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, did you see his crossfield kick for... It was the Shilcock try,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Great,
early
great
on.
Try.
Yeah.
I tell you what, there was some nice highlights in this game. I like the Aaron Reid try.
Yeah.
That was nice. They do practice.
That was the Tom Curry break, wasn't it? Tom Curry rampaging
he
through
is
the midfield.
Scary. Like, he is scary to look at when he's running full pelt.
Yep. He's awesome.
And there's another try I quite liked, but it escapes me off.
One of the Hoo-Hard tries.
Yeah, something like that. It's fine. in the end, it was a win. I think the Sale got 5 tries in the end, or 6 tries. It's got a lot of tries.
Yeah, they definitely got a bonus point comfortably.
It's got a lot of tries for a team which only won by 2 points. But that was that in the bag.
We mentioned Northampton then.
Yeah, we did.
Did you watch the game Northampton last time?
I loved this game.
I was flicking between the two. And apparently I need to watch this again. The second half, Dan Bigger goes off.
He's a hero.
Oh, my God.
The guy is
Bigger.
A hero.
Have I ever mentioned my love for Dan Bigger?
He's just a hero.
But the whole of Northampton, because Northampton, they lost 3 guys before kickoff. They lost...
Slighthome.
Yeah, on the wing. Freeman comes in. Yeah, Harrison, which is a big loss. Albeit, they've got Adendorf. Yeah, who... Were it last season or a couple of seasons ago, they wouldn't have as good a replacement, and they lost Aaron Painter as well. So three very important positions. Certainly two, you're tighter than your number 8. In the game, they were losing players throughout the game. They lost several through injury, and then Ribbons goes down with what looked like a really bad ankle shin injury, and ends up hobbling for the rest of the game, which didn't get any mention in comms.
That's a great point. It didn't get mentioned, did it?
No, and he was not 100%, but it probably didn't get mentioned because Bigger makes a dodgy-looking tackle, an awkward-looking tackle on Nemanja Nadolo, steaming down his channel.
Brings him down, though, first time.
He brings him down. There was a little bit of a trip. It was almost like a judo throw.
Yeah.
And he gets what looked like Nadolo's knee right in the middle, right in the meaty part of the inside of Bigger's quad. And he was in a lot of pain. He was getting, he kind of said no to the physios. He was getting helped off and then realises they've already used all their subs. They're down a man because JJ Tonks is in the bin.
In the back of his mind, Lions.
Well, yeah, in the back of his mind. And I could actually hear in the back of my head JB saying what he said to Courtney Laws when Courtney Laws got injured, or said about Courtney Laws when Courtney Laws got injured playing against Sale last year. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't play. Don't play. And Bigger, with that, knowing it could have been a worse, like couldn't be made worse and have a Lions still in doubt, he went back onto the pitch and Leicester identified, and they were running Nandolo and Jasper Visa down his channel.
Yeah.
Oh,
which,
long.
For the last...
Love it.
The last 8 minutes, Bigger was on one leg, and they shut them out. It was amazing. It was a brilliant finish to the game.
So, a bit of a red rag to a bull here, but I've always said this, and I maintain it, that Dan Bigger is the player that Owen Farrell wants to be. I've always thought that. The way he leads, the way he mouths off, the way he tries to get everything. Not enough high shots, and that is a shame.
Yeah.
He needs to work on that.
Bigger was class. Bigger
was
preserved
man of the
match.
It's good that he's absolutely outstanding, and yet he's still got stuff to work on.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Tackle higher, Dan.
So, just flip over this to the Lions chat. I've been thinking about this, and I genuinely think of the four fly halves who are up for selection. Throw in Ford as well.
Five.
I can see an argument for any two missing that plane.
Yeah, I
simply do not know who the outstanding fly half is.
I wouldn't want to be making that choice. I think I'd probably leave Sexton at home.
Which is incredible.
I think I'd leave Sexton and Ford.
Probably.
So Sexton was 10 last time. Yeah. He was 10 in Australia. Who was the 10th of the South Africa tour?
Stephen Jones.
Yes.
It was Stephen Jones. Well done.
Yeah. That's so tough. We will do this, by the way. We will, because it's a week on Thursday. Warren Gatland selects his side, and we will convene a selection meeting at some point to pick our squad. But Jasper Visa is part of the Springbok alignment camp, which sounds scary
it's
when you hear
ominous.
That.
So, yeah.
God, it sounds like diversity training.
But more sinister.
Less sinister. Much less sinister.
Springbok alignment camp. He's
multiple alignment camps. They're having a South African alignment camp.
Yeah.
They might even have multiple South African alignment camps because of the move. Anyway, they're having, I think, a Japanese alignment camp, a Japanese South African alignment camp, and then a European, or again, possibly multiple European.
Does anyone
alignment
see the
camps?
Irony in the word aligned here
everyone being spread out everywhere, but different time zones.
Fair play Jesper Visa, he's an outstanding player, but I mean that's not why Leicester signed him. They didn't want him to be that good. No, you better miss all the, you're meant to be just below international level.
Look at what sales lads are doing. That's good.
This is where Dan Dupree throws the ball on the floor.
Yeah,
you need to do that more often.
Yeah, he'll probably be having offloading classes now. On South Africa, I'm hoping that they do get a bit more time together, because it'd be horrible to watch them get battered by the Lions. I'm not saying they will. I'm not saying that at all. But it doesn't strike me like it's a fair playing field for them. How can it be if they've not played since the World Cup final?
So they've not played as a country at all since the World Cup final. You're quite right. They've not played a huge amount. They played kind of the Currie Cup internal Super Rugby SA, whatever you want to call it. They are playing in the Rainbow Cup South because of the COVID restrictions.
No, they'll never play each other, will they?
No, there is now Rainbow Cup North, which is effectively the Pro 12, and the Rainbow Cup South, which is the four South African teams, excluding the two South African teams who were formerly in the Pro 14.
Yeah, I mean, I feel sorry for the Pro 14 on this, because...
Yeah, it's totally outside their control.
We can talk about the Rainbow Cup.
Good. Ridiculous name, isn't it? It is a ridiculous name.
It is a ridiculous name. Especially after you have to split it to Rainbow Cup North and Rainbow Cup South.
Grow up.
But then a lot of their players should be match fit, at least, because they are playing in French League, in the Premiership, or in Japan.
Yeah, it actually levels it up a little bit. Both sides are in a pretty similar position, and so it makes it a bigger challenge for South Africa, because obviously it's four nations against one. But it's cool. But on the Rainbow Cup, did you just going to rattle through a couple of those, seeing as you brought it up? I have interviewed Peter Amani a couple of times.
I've had a beer with him,
and I've never got the death stare. And I after seeing him over the weekend, I need to interview him again so I can get the death stare. I love that guy. So he did his post-match interview still wearing his gum shield, firstly, which I loved. His team just battered Leinster, admittedly yeah. a you know second yeah. string Leinster. They just battered Leinster at the RDS, and the interviewer said something as innocuous as "Looked like you enjoyed that, Peter. How much do you enjoy it?" And he looked at the interviewer like he just insulted his mum.
Like Steve Diamond often looks at you, Tim.
Yeah, quite often. I absolutely love Peter Armani. I mean, Munster don't get many wins against Leinster these days.
Away as well, in Dublin, at the RDS.
I love it. And I was just jealous of that interviewer getting to stare at the... like, the look of disgust he gives the interviewers. Brilliant.
He's a hard man, isn't he?
He is really. A hard man.
Captain's Challenge has come up in a couple of games, in those inter-provincial Irish games. So in the Ulster game, your beloved Ulster lost due to a Captain's Challenge.
Yeah, they lost with a last-minute try... in the corner from Connacht, but that was allowed because of a captain's challenge. Now I've seen the highlights of the game. I've not actually seen the incident of the captain's challenge. I believe there might be a little bit of controversy around it, which does mean, because a captain's challenge, you can do any try scoring incident. This was not the incident that led to the try scoring, or you can do any foul play or anything in the last 5 minutes. And I think this was one of those. In the last 5 minutes, which I did flag last week or 2 weeks ago when we first spoke about this, because there are so many times, so many incidents, and there will be multiple in any last 5 minutes of any game where there are infringements in a ruck, or as you said before, Tim, that have no mitigation, no material impact on the game that occur, that if you give captains the right when the game is on the line, they will... get them reviewed and it will change the course of the game.
It's really interesting you say that, because when you jump over to the Munster-Leinster game, there was an attempted captain's challenge at the by Munster, who'd already won the game, but they in the closing stages they were trying to score a try, and they were denied a captain's challenge because... And there's an element where I was watching this going, oh, you don't need to make it that confusing. But in the captain's challenge in the last 5 minutes of a game, you can only challenge a whistled decision. Is the way the referee described it. So you can't challenge a non-decision.
Yeah.
So that guy went off his feet there.
Okay.
You can only say you've penalised him for holding on. Can you look at it again?
So that I prefer that, but I still think there's going to be decisions that should not be scrutinised to that extent getting scrutinised to that extent.
Yeah.
That is a risk. And because it will only happen in the last 5 minutes of a game where there is opportunity to actually materially affect the outcome of the game, it will cause controversy.
Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on it. But
keep an eye on it.
I'm a little bit unsure about it. I think it'll do more harm than good.
Well, certainly there was a few confused faces after the weekend in those games where it was used.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Elsewhere, just rattling through, in Super Rugby AU, Jordan Oliver-Fella scored a hat-trick for the Western Force.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the game.
George North got injured, and it looks quite a worrying injury. With Lions in mind. Same for Rory Sutherland. Richard Cockerell said that he's probably going to be out at best 6 to 8 weeks, which...
Because Sutherland was playing some really nice stuff.
He was. And D-Mac did it again for the Chiefs, who are so much better without Gatland.
Yeah. They've actually won.
Yeah.
They've won multiple games. I think they're second top, aren't they?
But D-Mac with a last-minute kick to win again.
Against my beloved Canes.
Yeah.
That's quite incredible. Quite incredible,
yeah.
Did you
see any in the Super Rugby? Did you see any of the highlights of Crusaders and particularly Will Jordan?
Oh, no, I saw his try. One of his tries.
He's just amazing. He's got that. He's got the pace. He's got the step. He's got the balance. He's like a modern version of Christian Cullen. He's that kind of runner.
That's a great shout.
He's such a good player.
The England women's England won the Women's Six Nations Championship, which is, as we all know, the only Six Nations Championship which counts.
Yeah.
So delighted that England are on top of the rugby world.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the only game in that championship that actually counted.
Everything else
was 40, 50, 60 point whitewashes.
It's not constructive. And to go...
That is a constructive game. That is a really...
That one is. But that to something JB has said before, which I totally agree with, you shouldn't just map men's rugby onto women's rugby.
No.
And you should look at that and go... We're not Six Nations isn't going to be any good. It's not going to spread the word of the game at all, having Wales getting battered by England and France. Actually, much better. Make it a big grudge between England and France for the next few years. Just have three match series every spring.
Or look at the best teams together in the world. Like
they can do anything they want.
They can do whatever they want, and why do it just like it's always been done in the men's game?
A different sport, but look at rugby league. There are only really three teams in the world in rugby league. There are lots more teams that play it, but only three of any note: England, New Zealand and Australia.
Or Great Britain in that case.
Or Great Britain. But yeah, get those three together and get them playing the games. You don't need to see... Ireland versus Wales, or I don't know, Lebanon versus Papua New Guinea. It's kind of irrelevant.
Absolutely. And just as we do a whistle stop tour of the rugby world, Major League Rugby, I'm very close to declaring myself a NOLA Gold fan.
Wow.
Well, I New Orleans is on my list of places I really want to go.
All about Houston Sabercats.
Yeah, me too.
All about them.
So you want to do a bit of Texas?
Yeah.
Because you've got Austin Gilgronis as well.
We do, but it's Sabercats, mate. It's their wide options, mate. Their wide options are electric. Until you realise that, until you see the firepower that the Houston Sabercats can put out, particularly on the wing, then I don't think, you know...
Who are the wingers?
Particularly one Leicester Tigers raised winger.
Zach Godfrey. You know who is that? Zach Godfrey?
Zach Godfrey.
Yeah, Zach Godfrey. Yeah. Kills it.
Well,
week in, week out.
Well, I really want to do the sort of that musical pilgrimage of the southern states of America, like Tennessee and
I'll do it.
Mississippi and New Orleans and stuff. No, that's fine.
I can be persuaded to come with you.
but they've got a, okay. Let me try and sell New Orleans to you. They've got a quartered kit.
Okay, I'm in.
Gold, very, very thin stripes.
Yeah.
On half the quarters and plain white on the others. It looks lovely. And they've got the most American sounding player. Kane Thompson, the former Samoa lock, plays for them. But they've got the most American sounding centres in their squad. Keanu Andrada.
Wow.
And Ross Depperschmidt.
Wow. That's incredible.
Awesome.
I love it.
Oh, look at that
in fact,
kit.
No,
there we go.
No, the kit is amazing.
That kit is awesome, JB.
That is awesome.
Now go to the coach page, and they've got the most American-looking coach ever, their director of rugby.
Go to Todd Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Oh, the owner. Tim Falcon, the owner. That is...
Tim Falcon.
Tim Falcon looks like Del Boy.
Look on the left-hand side. How American does that guy look?
I just love it. I love everything about this. I love their jackets. I love their
ties. Oh, yes.
Tim Falcon, franchisee.
So anyway, my point being, we're going to need to get over to check out some Major League Rugby.
My brother was in New Orleans a couple of years ago. He was raving about it.
Really? You've been like raving in New Orleans?
Raving about going to New York.
You should really keep that in the wraps with his job.
No, we've got a New England Free Jacks fan on the live stream. Ed, very unhappy that I'm maybe going NOLA Gold. I
say what, Free Jacks, great kit.
That is a good kit.
Great kit.
I mean, do they call it kit or do they call it
uniform?
Uniform. Great uniform.
The Giltinis, I do quite like Giltinis.
All white.
And bringing in the players, bringing in AAC
and
Gitto. And
that Coliseum, that stadium they play in is amazing.
But I've always been a DTH Van der Merwe fan. I think he's just a quality player. Really, just an out-and-out finisher. So I quite like him playing as well.
You might have to support the Seattle Sabercats, Seattle Seawolves now.
Seawolves.
Because your Ulster boy, Rory Best, is going there as a coach.
Oh, yes.
Just say, right, there's an American thing which I love. which is when they just get a thing and combine it with an animal. So, like, timber wolves. I don't believe there is a wolf which is suited, you know, to making timber. And I can't imagine that there's a particular wolf which is very good. In fact, the worst designed animal to be in the sea would be a wolf. Like, it just isn't. It's not a realistic proposition, is it? Timber wolves. Sea wolves. Come on.
Hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Mountain shark.
the land salmons. Here they come.
Just on that, there was one. There was a poll I saw this week, which I don't think people have thought through. But 82% of Brits want to reintroduce extinct animals into the wild in the UK.
I'm all for this.
Well, yeah, you say this, but which I can understand. 82% of people going, "Oh yeah, that's the kind thing to do, isn't it? To get back those animals that humans have made extinct." But on the list of animals, wolves and bears.
It's a really interesting one, this. Right?
Natural selection. Yeah. I'm all for natural selection.
Yeah, if you want to be careless at 3 a.m, you know, with a delicious-smelling kebab, that is wolf bait.
I quite like being able to say to my kids, on a nice week like we've had, can I go to the park with my friends? Yeah, sure. Not, yeah, sure, just take the bear mace and a shotgun.
Take the shotgun, please, son. Yes, so... On a serious note on this, read the book Rewilding by Isabella Tree. It is one of the most fantastic books I've ever read. And it is about exactly this, rewilding and putting native species back in. She's basically just leaving land to grow.
It was somewhere in southern England, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it in,
I can't remember. Is the Nepa State.
Where's that?
It's down somewhere, on some mudflats somewhere. And I know it's
somewhere in southern England.
Yeah, somewhere in southern England. It's about 300 acres, Nepa State. You can go camping there. It's about 28 different species of dung beetle. How about that?
Wow.
You've got to go.
But there's Yellowstone reintroduced wolves.
I want to go there as well.
Yeah.
Where's the nearest team to that? Is Utah near there? Because they've got a team.
I don't know. I know because I've read a little bit about this a long time ago, where they reintroduced it to control the elk population, and the knock-on effects down the... So wolves were native to there. Wolves were taken out of there. Elk population exploded. But the knock-on effects down the food chain, because there's too many elks, they're eating more of something else that is a food supply for something else that is a food supply for something else. And when you balance the ecosystem back, everything else evens out.
So what you need, right, is a range of mouthpiece apertures. So, like, some things eat this, some things eat that, and they, you know, between them all, you don't get any invasive species because it all balances out. But then when you get rid of the wolves, say if the cows outcompete the pigs, then the pigs, the thing which they do then starts to outcompete the certain type of foliage.
Wow.
It's all very, very complex stuff. Ultimately, what it means, we just need predators.
Yeah,
lots and lots of predators.
And I remember similar thread. I was up in Skye, northwest Scotland, the Isle of Skye, and we did a little visit, a boat trip to another, a tiny island off Skye, not populated, not inhabited by humans. And some rats got onto the island in the 17th century, 18th century, and there's lots of native birds that live in the ground. And the rats just, the population totally exploded. It might have been puffins, yeah.
Yeah, because it happened in Puffin Island in North Wales.
And the rats were eating all the eggs. But the rat, there's nothing to control the rat population. They just totally exploded.
Mm.
And we were talking to the sailors who took us out there were saying, they send two guys out there for 2 weeks at a time just to kill as many rats as they possibly can. They'll kill 10,000-20,000 rats.
And what? It doesn't even
touch the surface of the rat population.
Have you heard of Snake Island, which is just off... it sounds like the plot of a film, right? Snake Island, just off the coast of Brazil. And it's got more snakes per square metre than any... I mean, it's lethal. You can't go there. You just can't go there.
I mean, wouldn't it be more, you know, financially and time efficient just to nuke it?
Well, nuke all the puffins. Yeah, save all the puffins, then nuke all the rats.
Yeah. So Puffin Island has no puffins on because of rats.
Yeah. So, bloody rats.
Wow.
Where's Snake Island?
Yeah, that'd be like, instead of the we can update it from the last chopper out of Saigon to the last puffin out of Skye. Love it. No, I'm not very good at this whole YouTube malarkey. I don't really know how it works. As you might have noticed, we're fairly new to it. Mm. But Joseph has said, you know, there's a bunch of people watching and there's hardly any likes. What's up with that, lads? I think basically it's
we're
Joseph,
not very good?
Because we're not very... No, it's not. I think we're not very good at asking people to do all the basic stuff that people
press
that
like.
Do YouTube... Press like.
All 58 of you now press like.
Just press like. That'll probably help. And it's worth pointing out, we have no financial backers. We're sat here in our own self-made studio in the basement flat of JB's house, the rugby dungeon. These are all shirts that we've accumulated. And been sent by people from around the world. We have no financial backers. We have nothing like that. We just love the game of rugby. And
so press like.
Help.
Press
Thank
like
you.
Now. We'll talk about rugby again.
Please help.
Now, can I just bring something up? Two things have changed in the Rugby Dungeon this week from when we were in here last. There is a kind of strong zero missing. Well, the other thing that's changed is, JB, you've got a horrible cut on your arm, and I assume the two things were linked.
Yeah, I had some strong zero, and then a knife fight. It's usually what happens.
Pretty much.
Oh, by the way, just to wrap up the Major League Rugby before we do move back to other stuff, it's worth pointing out, there's a free live stream via the Rugby Network app of MLR games, and I'm going to be checking out that to see... I'm not going to say my beloved Nola Gold yet, but I'm getting close to declaring... I am also very, very close to saying I am a neutral London Irish fan.
Definitely neutral.
I absolutely love that side.
Did you watch the game this week?
That ground looks so good. I haven't been to it yet.
It actually looks better when there's no fans because of the seating.
You're a construction expert, right? And you know a bit about stadiums and that kind of stuff, right? How about this for an innovation? Because everything else has been done. Seats that change colour. Why does this not exist? It can't be hard.
No, it wouldn't be that hard. It would be phenomenally expensive.
Why?
How are you going to get them to change colour?
Well, my idea would be, because the seats only need to change colour, don't they, when people are not sitting in them?
Yeah.
So if every seat was white, there surely must be a lighting scenario where you could just have a little light panel. I've just literally made this up in front of the seat to project up. And that's fairly cheap technology.
But where's the light?
So where your feet are.
Yeah.
Against the concrete.
Yeah.
Embedded in there, you have lights anyway, don't you? Like LEDs and walkway lights.
Not in the concrete there. The lighting would be from the top down.
Mm.
So you could have all the seats as a neutral colour, white.
And then light them.
Yeah, you could do that. That wouldn't be particularly expensive. Because, but if you have lights that... If you want to...
Do you know what would work?
What I was thinking was, if you're using each seat as effectively a pixel...
Mm.
So you could use the seats as a screen, then each seat needs to be able to change light, change colour independently.
That's
now,
what I
that would
thought.
Be phenomenally expensive.
It must be a cheap way to do it, though.
I don't know.
It must be a technology. No, the reason my idea won't work is because sunlight would ruin it.
Yeah.
That's why every ground from now on needs to be built like Rassings.
Yeah.
Dark. Pitch black.
Then you can turn it into a nightclub afterwards.
Yeah, you 100%. Yeah. I don't know how you do it. But if every seat could light, so the point I'm making is, when Irish go in, it can all be green.
Yeah,
when Brentford
go
in, it can all be red, or whatever it needs to be.
Well, did you see the Manchester United news last week or 2 weeks ago around, they've put a load of black banners on the bottom half, all the bottom tier of seating.
Yes, I did see this.
Because when they're playing at home in red, and they glance out of the corner of their eye, they can't pick out the red shirt of their player against the
red
seat background, which has never been a problem in the past when...
It's
when
been
fans
sold
are
out.
In, yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm, that is, yeah, good point. Good point well made.
The lighting of each seat, you could do it, because what I was thinking you wanted to do each seat independently, so you could project, not even project, you could get messages
on. Well,
that's
kind
them.
Of what I thought originally. If you could set up individually light each seat.
It could definitely be done. It's just going to be expensive.
The Brentford Stadium's cool, though.
It is cool.
It is cool.
And I think Paddy's Day... Next year, that should be a little day out, because that atmosphere, that place will be bouncing next March.
I'd love to have seen what London Irish have done this year with the new stadium and with fans and see what kind of footfall they get.
Yeah, because that is a big Paddy's Day. Is a big game.
It is a massive one for them. And I did mention last week that this was a bit of a grudge match and that Irish will bring some edge. And we sort of joked, potentially, is this the way that Harlequins feel about Saracens? Irish feel about Harlequins, where the other half doesn't know it's their derby match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it very much is for London Irish. I think it also is for Quins, though.
Yeah.
There was real edge in this one, wasn't there?
There was a lot of nickel, like almost too much nickel. And certainly for one man in Andre Esterhazen, there was definitely too much nickel.
Did he get red card?
He got red carded. It probably was stupid, but it probably was the right outcome. He was kind of, there was a big melee that went off several times, actually. There were several altercations. And then away from the main melee was him and Curtis Rona, two big boys playing against each other. And Andre Esterhazen has got Curtis Rona's kind of jersey across his chest.
Yeah.
And he's pushing him. And on one of the pushes is just too forceful. And it ends up
just
being
chicken wings in.
Yeah, it ends up being a forearm elbow.
We've all been
makes
there.
Contact
We've
with
all
the,
been there.
The head neck area.
Head neck area, of course he did. Of course he
I
did.
Mean, it's worth pointing out as well, generally, players show unbelievable restraint.
Yeah.
Like, to smash each other constantly. Yeah. They're in that little melee.
I'd just like to ask the lawmakers this one question.
I'm not trying to say Andre Esterhazen shouldn't have got a red card or whatever. I'm just saying they show massive restraint.
Why are we watching Andre Esterhazen? This is what we want to see. This is what he should do. This is why I'm watching him. That's why it excites me, the way he dominates other people. I want to see this.
Yeah, but he took
and it. And I'll see Curtis Rona handle it.
He took
like
it too far. James Stokes and Curtis Rona handled it pretty well, to be fair to them, with some able assistance from the back row. But Irish are unlucky.
They will be gutted.
Yeah.
Absolutely gutted, because it ends any outside hope they had of top four. But had they won that game, they're sort of sniffing around down the table a bit. But they're a good team. They just... I think they lost that one rather than Quinns won it. But fair play, Quinns, for coming through.
Their man, Marcus Smith. If anyone won it, Smith won it.
That try for Marcus Smith at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. My with the pressure on like that, the show, the goal, the acceleration, the strength to get away from the tacklers.
Quinns are going to be a nightmare. They're going to be an absolute nightmare. It's just a shame the way it's going to form for them. They're not going to have, I don't think they'll have the opportunities to get in the final. Maybe they will.
Well, I think top four, they've got a big issue now. I mean, it's going to be a test to them because two really important players for them that have been a massive part of the success they've had this season are both out. Well, Andre Esterhazen will probably miss a couple of games.
Yeah.
And Will Evans.
Yeah.
His season's done.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a real blow. Because
he's been amazing.
And someone told me that the other day, but I was drunk, so I couldn't remember if it was a real thing. Someone on Saturday night.
That is a big blow because he's so important.
His turnovers are massive.
His turnovers and his link play as well. Mm. He's a really good player. And another good example of someone that Leicester Tigers let go, failing to identify talent.
Yeah, that is a huge problem for them.
And a good point that Burge makes, that's not Andre Esterhazen's first red of the season.
So he may not get
mitigated down.
Yeah,
as long as he's back for playoffs, it doesn't matter.
Well, actually, it's a good point.
He will be back for playoffs.
Are we going to see Quinns making up friendly fixtures now?
I did watch, when was it? I only watched 10 minutes of it. Bathay versus Quinns was on Friday afternoon, late afternoon.
Fair play for watching that. How was it?
It was okay.
Archie White captain Quinns, didn't he?
I don't know, because there was no commentary. So I just dipped in, watched 20 minutes of it, there was no commentary. And then dipped out again. Yeah. Someone, I don't know who it was, one of the Bath centres put in a massive hit. I'm sure it was Paul Lasique playing for Quinns. He put a massive hit on Paul Lasique.
Really?
Yeah, a huge hit. He then did get penalised for not rolling away, which I think was a little bit harsh. But
they're just looking for a reason to penalise excessive force.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Also, there's so much great rugby to talk about. And so I apologise if in any particular game we skirt over it. That, despite the fact there's so much rugby to talk about, I think there was probably the best example of why we just need to get back to normal as quick as possible, get back in rugby grounds, start having conversations with real people, because people are losing their minds. What's going on with James Haskell?
Right.
Get me up to speed. What's going on?
So, James Haskell's plight this week reminded me of my own plight. Because I was in Didsbury Talk H Rugby Club, and we were having a few beers. By the way, Didsbury is simply the best place to have a few beers in a sunny day. We've got this little balcony. We're overlooking these playing fields. It is just phenomenal. So we're having some beers, and I'm not the only one that thinks this place is phenomenal. Lots of locals from Didsbury think it's also phenomenal. So they trot down, they put out a picnic blanket, and they're all around the edges of this park. So you've got a cricket square, you've got two rugby pitches, you've got two football pitches. It's an enormous space, all surrounded by trees, all infested with green parakeets. So it's like you're abroad.
To continue the conversation about ecosystems being messed up.
Yeah, so we need some falcons, right? So anyway, that's not the point.
Sorry.
So they're on these blankets. Anyway, Didsbury Football Club has got a brand new director of football, who then proceeded...
You're not a football director.
No, director of football. Mm. Not a football, yeah. He then proceeded to walk around the playing fields and evict every single member of the public from drinking on the sports fields. So he comes back and I'm like, what? Why would you do this? Like, what about the reputational? He's telling me all the plans. Like, first thing we need to get is the entrance is sealed off. I was like, that can't be your first move as director of football. You want to annoy everybody in the local community by sealing off the entrances. This is brilliant. Ugh. And then this is where it gets all James Haskell-y. He starts telling me these stories. He starts saying, well, you know, you won't have seen this because some people have been, you know, breaking bottles and then burying them so people fall on them. It's like, I haven't seen that because I suspect it hasn't happened. And people make up these ridiculous stories just to get their own way, just so they can have that little bit of power. It sounds like...
A shard of a broken bottle, which over time got covered by a little bit of soil, turned into someone has dug a hole, buried a broken bottle and covered it up again.
What are the chances of, when you evict someone who is a good law-abiding citizen from sitting on your field, that will discourage the sort of person that likes to bury bottles? Like, what is he? There's no overlap in these people whatsoever.
If someone... that's the way to look at it, you're right. If someone would actually bury a broken bottle, they'd also jump over a fence.
Yeah, I was going to bury this bottle, but as I'm not allowed on the field, I won't bother. Can't do it. I'm not allowed on the field.
So what's been going on with James Haskell?
So he took his dog...
Just to say this, I don't totally know what's been going on. All I know is that some rugby accounts have been on one today. I was having such a good time this weekend watching rugby. I've just ignored it.
Thankfully, I've totally missed this.
James Haskell took his dog for a walk, right? And a farmer said, "Put your dog back on the lead." And I don't know what happened next. It turns out there are no animals in this field. There's no animals probably in the whole damn county. And he says, "I would do exactly the same thing. I keep my dog off the lead. In fact, I do it all the time." And this has now turned into James Haskell outing himself as a misogynist, I guess, farm animal genocide enthusiast. I can't... The people have started sending him like inboxes.
Some
of,
rap
like,
sheet, that.
Yeah, like of mauled animals and stuff like that. So it's all gone really... It's all gone very, very pear-shaped on Twitter today.
And we thought him running into a post protector at the Millennium Stadium was the...
You take your dog out for a walk and you come back a misogynist. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
People just need to get back to doing normal stuff. But this with actual humans again.
Yeah, but this is their normal thing. This is literally their normal thing. The hysteria. The hysteria is rather amusing. I think people do forget how much James Haskell has done for rugby, particularly compared to, you know, social justice focused rugby accounts. You know, he's done an awful lot more. Cut him some slack.
Well, also, one thing I would say about whatever you kind of think, I admire the man because we all have the same 24 hours in a day. And sometimes people say to me, "God, you managed to get a lot done in a week, Tim." And I know the amount of time I waste and I know what I could achieve if I really knuckled down. James Haskell totally knuckles down.
He's remarkable.
He's an unbelievable
he's
guy.
Remarkable. He's productive.
He was said, because obviously he's too busy to type. So I now send voicemail notes on WhatsApp, mostly so people think I'm busy, but I'm not really. He sent me a voice note whilst his DJ set is playing in the background. So he's obviously practicing his DJ sets whilst getting through to his admin of annoying rugby podcasters that are contacting him. But anyway, the guy's remarkably kind with his time. He tells great stories. I honestly don't think there's many people out there who are spreading the word of rugby as much as James Haskell is doing as good a job at that.
I know who I'd rather have a beer with out of the people up in arms and the man himself.
Yes,
so, but on that, there's been so much good stuff and I've loved the rugby this weekend that I just think we all need to get back in a clubhouse, have a beer and remember.
But they've never been to a clubhouse. They won't stop Tim. It's not as if they were taken out of the clubhouse. They've never been to one for the most part. Most of them, some of them retired when they were 15. They're 15! They talk about grassroots rugby. They've not been to a rugby club since they were 15. So, anyway, it's just a thought I had.
Right.
Any other games?
Yes, there was Bath Wasps. So Bath, yeah. It was 2021 Bath against 2020 Wasps. And Wasps looked absolutely superb.
Yeah, Jacob Umanga's back.
Did you see the double offload phase of play? That was remarkable.
Oh, was that... That was the Bath try?
No, it was Jacob Umanga.
The Elliot Stook... That try was awesome. The Ben Spencer try. Elliot Stook to Miles Reed... Who's class?
He is class, isn't he?
To Ben Spencer, that try was awesome. There's some great tries, but yeah, Jake, I know what was the one you were talking about.
So it's like a half break, hand off onto Jules, out Umanga out the back door to the next player. He makes some breaks, goes down. Somehow Umanga gets back into the line again, gets the ball again, and same backdoor offload. So two offloads in the same phase of play, and Le Bourgeois goes underneath the sticks.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
It was something.
Yeah.
And just, he seems to be... I wonder if, being a young man, he came with no sort of track record and no one knew what to expect. Then they worked out what to expect from him, and he's had a really tough learning curve, learning how to play something different or showing someone a different look or somehow getting back to form in order to defeat the people that now know how to defeat him.
There's an interesting one as well with, obviously, when... Wasps were playing their best stuff last year was when Gopeth came back and was controlling things at 12, but actually, potentially for Umaga's development and Charlie Atkinson's development, controlling too many things because he was kicking everything. He was probably taking a lot of the decision-making on what, when to kick, when to run, what plays they're going to use. Gopeth hasn't been as an integral part of the team this season. If anything, he's probably... coming to the end of his time playing. He's 37 or 38.
37, yeah.
Yeah. And it's taken a little bit of time for Jacob Umaga to be able to kind of run on his own, run without stabilisers, without that such an experienced controlling figure next to him. And maybe we will start to see that benefit of him now learning to do so on his own, which will, unfortunately for Wasps, it will only really have any impact next season.
Yeah.
Because this season is... basically done.
Don't underestimate the impact that Dan Robson will make being back regularly in that side again.
Which is a good point. And Joe Launchbury as well. Like Joe Launchbury as a captaincy and a leadership figure.
But tying into sort of looping back round to the general thrust of the Haskell point, I thought it was quite interesting that Jacob Umanga, when he was not playing his best and Charlie Atkinson was getting the starts, he mentioned that he's come off social media because he was not liking it very much. And James Grayson, funnily enough, has said the same in the last week or two.
Interesting.
So there's a couple of examples of young guys.
Dan Pickens not even on it.
Well, no.
Yeah.
And I think that would be my advice. I wish I wasn't on it. And I one of these days I will actually hit the delete button and
just do it, Tim.
Just nuke it.
Feel free.
Yeah. But
keep the Egg Chasers account for lurking.
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Yeah. But I will say it's just. Potentially, I wonder if possibly that had any part to play. I don't know.
I don't know.
Just in terms of the mindset of a guy.
I think when you're on a downer, you're on a downer. Everything seems a little bit down. And I think a game like that, when you're offloading out the back door, will make everything feel a lot better.
Yeah.
A confidence boost.
Yeah.
Against a big name team in Bath.
And not only that, I thought they'd lost this because Bath, they are gritty. And for a team that are rubbish, they've got a hell of a lot of players that really impressed me, like Miles Reed, Bayliss. There's a lot of lads in there. I think, bloody hell, he's really good. Abano until his red card.
Yeah.
His slow motion try, which I think could have actually been a red card in its own right, because if you've seen it in slow motion, he basically, him and Tommy Taylor's head meets Abano's shoulder about an inch away from the ground. There's no way. He can't go any lower, right? But it is shoulder to head without any of it. And then just starts to proceed to drive Tommy Taylor backwards, slowly,
like
5 yards later. It was brilliant. So it's an impressive win for Wasps to stay in the fight. That is, it's not the rugby they played. That was lovely. That's great. But what Wasps did really well when they were winning is they stayed in the fight, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, this has to be for Wasps. This is building for next season.
Yeah, 100%. And as I say, because of the situation we're in, it's largely irrelevant.
Mm.
Well, who actually won the game? It was just a good game.
Yeah. Mm. So what we've not spoke about, unless you want to finish off this game first.
No, go on.
Well, Premiership Rugby is no longer led by the same management team.
Yeah. And I listened to both your videos on this in the week. Really good. Two really good videos.
So I know what I said. You know what we both said. I've not heard your version, Tim. What did you think?
A sad end to a sorry tenure in charge of Premiership Rugby, in which over the last 20 months, Darren Childs has had, admittedly, some extraordinary situations to deal with.
Mm.
And didn't deal with them. Or at least was never a public face to the issues as they were unfolding, which I think has massively damaged the game and its standing and the confidence people had in it. The Saracen salary cap compounded by coronavirus. We only saw him a couple of times, and I think that's unforgivable in the situation. I think the way that rugby is administered and the way that the communication is done, and we've talked about this, is pretty poor across the board. But as the focal point, I just think he was ineffective as a man leading the sport. And then you compound that with the fact that the reason he was brought in was to negotiate a TV deal. And whilst I think coronavirus is absolutely a thing you can cut him a bit of slack on that for, nevertheless, he ended up signing off a deal that was less than the one he got offered.
It must be like signing his own death warrant, Matt.
Yeah.
I mean, so many different angles to this. So Premiership Rugby on Tuesday, when this broke, I phoned them. It's like, okay, so how long have you known? About an hour. All right, so what's the plan? I'll just throw it to leadership. Leadership will sort it out. Okay.
Well, they've got Nigel Melville in there.
Yeah, but it's not the same role, is it?
Not the same role, but you've got, like, but bearing in mind, I would say, and again, this is not to say anything about Darren Childs as a bloke, and he's clearly got to a very high level of competency in a management role. He was at UK TV and they brought him in. CBC brought him in from there. So it's nothing to do with him as a bloke. I just think this, with the very, very trying times we had, it needed someone with the ability to stand out in front of a microphone, go onto BT Sport and just explain what was going on. And he said nothing. And
Have you ever encountered him? Do you ever see him? Do you ever see him again?
He's only made two. I think he was only ever on BT Sport a couple of times. So the Saracen salary cap thing happened, and no one from Premiership Rugby said anything on it for 3 months.
Amazing. Yeah.
No, I
unbelievable.
I actually think the Saracens salary cap, so obviously the public face insider stuff, it was not good enough, but I actually think the decisions that they chose is one of the areas that he should actually take some credit from, i.e. we had the same situation back in 2015 where three clubs breached the salary cap rules.
You are right.
The whole thing got swept under the carpet.
Yeah,
they got behind the scenes fine. The 2019 Saracens, which was when CVC and Darren Childs had been appointed or come in and been appointed, it was a word that you used in your video, Tim, there was transparency. Now, some of that transparency was reluctant transparency, which I think was on behalf of Saracens, because we didn't get the actual full report until about 2 months later. And then we got the redacted report leaked, we got the full report leaked, and then the redacted report actually issued. But I actually think he presided over that, and he probably deserves some credit for the way that
was
handled.
Nice one, Phil. Well done for spotting that. It's a good shout.
Albeit it could have been done in a more transparent manner.
Well, when you lose a head guy, as anyone will tell you, actually, you would like to do it in a manner that you have some continuity, so you've got some succession planning. And that's what's so striking about this. This is why the excuse that he's gone to CBC as a consultant or he's going to look at other business interests is completely false. Because this would have been planned out months and months ahead. They've said, right, we can have a process, we need a replacement. Headhunters would have been involved. There'd be a media narrative for them. I mean, it wouldn't even need to be a media narrative. They could say, look, Darren Childs is leaving in 3 months and his successor will be announced in due course. But it wasn't. It was like, pack your bags today. You've got to go. The reason for that...
Well, he resigned. Is what they're saying.
He was facing a vote of no confidence from at least from the clubs.
So Premiership Rugby did know then, or the club, because the Premiership Rugby is the clubs.
Very good question.
So the clubs would have considered. Well, if what you're saying is true, and they were planning a vote of no confidence,
it is true.
Okay, well I know, but because I haven't heard that myself, I don't know your sources, so I'm just gonna just sit on the fence. So if that is true, then Premiership Rugby would have, the clubs who are Premiership Rugby effectively, would have at least considered what the consequences of that being going through and having a vote of no confidence, and they would have had someone in mind to select. As it is, they've got Nigel Melville, steady hand on the tiller, to oversee the transition to a new person.
Yeah, it's, you know, the part which gets me is the bit where we are told time and time again, CVC is not just money, it's expertise. Look at all these experts that they've got in. Now, when Darren Childs was first appointed, I was probably mixed on the thing. Okay, yeah, maybe it's... I didn't know. The answer is, I did not know. But looking back at it, has UK TV ever bid on anything? What? Other than repeats?
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
But what's the point? Have people seen CVC? Like, CVC's business model is to buy things that they think are undervalued, package them together, and sell them on for a profit in about 5 years.
It depends what they're doing, doesn't it? Like, they're just making...
Well, that's what they did with F1 anyway.
Yeah. Because they're talking about bidding on... Well, they're bidding on Toshiba. They're trying to buy Toshiba at the moment, which is like a Japanese conglomerate that has fingers in multiple different pies.
Different ways to do things. I mean, in my mind, the Premiership deal is purely for one thing and one thing only. It's to generate cash. It's like it's a financial instrument. I don't think they're that bothered about the resale value. Obviously, they'd like that.
And they're not rugby aficionados, are they?
And sounds like neither is Darren Childs, sadly. I think you put it nicely, Tim. Not a bad bloke. Probably a very decent man. Horrible appointment. Should never have happened. And I hope that they learn from this. I'd like to see someone like Mark Evans come in, who really has a great understanding of rugby. Knows the ins and outs. I mean, there is not. I don't agree with Mark Evans on a lot of things, but every single issue I've ever asked him about has been well considered, and I think that's really important. As long as someone's considered every single issue, you say, yeah, okay, that should be the guy that we go forward with. I'd love to see someone like that step up with the vision and the knowledge to be able to make substantial changes in Premiership rugby.
So I really enjoyed your Rugby Dungeon with Mark Evans, and I really like Mark Evans every time I've heard him speak. I am a bit disappointed, though, because this should be the time when JB 2021 really gets going.
Yeah, exactly right.
You're not going to throw your hat in the ring.
Because this needs a commissioner, I think. Premiership Rugby needs a commissioner.
It needs someone who doesn't mind smashing through doors.
Yeah, in a very sharply tailored blazer.
Multiple sharply tailored
blazers. Yeah, at the same time. Yeah.
That's what we want. Sometimes when there's, you know, at a Premiership game, let's just imagine that Andre Esterhazy would be a great example, because that took ages of the TMO and referee deciding. Like, when it gets to a certain point, the entrance music comes on.
Oh my God!
And through the tunnel, the commissioner comes out and just with a red card. Yeah,
for the officials.
Yeah.
With my replacement goon officials. Get them on the field.
Your replacement goon officials who are always looking in the wrong direction when a fight breaks out. Yeah.
Although if JB did do that as commissioner, it would never be to pull out a red card. It would just be to get on the mic and go, let the boys play.
Let the boys play. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I like that role. I think that's a role which is designed for me, actually.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, the whole thing's a bit of a farce. I don't think he was the right appointment. I don't think... I feel sorry for the people at Premiership Rugby. So I think you're right. People at the clubs knew this was going to happen because obviously they were agitating for it. But I don't think the people who actually had to deal with the situation on the day knew about it. And I think that's a... Because... Either they did, in which case they should have thought of something to say when it happens. Right?
Yeah.
But I'm willing to say that they didn't know, and that's a really tough break for them, because this is their job and they've got to come up with a message, haven't they? They've got to do something. So you combine those two things and it's not particularly great for them. Is there anything else on Darren Childs? I just hope they make a good next appointment.
Yeah, go and watch those two videos, I'd say.
Yeah.
Because you two both put out... very strong cases. You made a lot of very good points, and more so than we could probably do right now.
Yeah. I will say this one thing. Whoever's next, whoever's head of Premiership Rugby next, it's not hard to love this sport. It's probably, in my mind, outside of something like the NRL or maybe the NFL, something like that, it's an easy sell. How hard can it be to sell this sport? Mm. Like, what are we on now? 1 hour, 42 minutes.
And oh my God, let's wrap this bloody thing up.
Yeah, like, it is an easy sport to talk about. It's an easy sport to sell. There are so many storylines. There are so many narratives.
If you run out of rugby, talk about puffins.
Yeah,
and
talk about puffins.
Exactly.
It's not hard. It's not, you know, like even Worcester. Like the fact that nobody knows what's happening at Worcester. No one will ever know. The only way you'll know about what's happening at Worcester is if they happen to win games and they win a few column inches in the press. Like, that's a good story in itself. People should know. And I don't think the Premiership do nearly enough to sell the storylines of all these teams.
I totally agree. And I get bored saying it. Rugby is about storytelling, as all sport is. And we don't, you're right, we don't do a good job of it. And as much as anything, I think you need people that just enthuse about the sport itself. And that's why I started this podcast. I was buzzing to do this because there's so much great rugby I wanted to talk about and I wanted to get into. And you just get the sense sometimes that there's too many people in too prominent a position that just want to focus on other stuff except for enthusing about the sport that they're there to get excited about.
What is it that you're focusing on?
So basically, in short, give us the gig. We'll sort it.
Yeah.
Perfect. JB 2021.
Yeah, right now. Right now. Changes right now.
I'll be quite happy being a... can I be like... communications type guy, the Dominic Cummins to your to the Bojo. I'll be Dominic Cummins.
I'd love to see someone like from a different arena. Do you like the way they do in? I know we've spoken about this before. Rugby league has like Claire Balding,
the chairman, or Tony Adams or Andy Burnham was.
Andy Burnham, did we talk about that?
We've spoken about that in the past.
Yeah. Ryan Giggs is a rugby fan. He might be at loose end soon. moving on. Let's get excited about the rugby this weekend. We've got European semi-finals. Massive games. Friday night, we've got Leicester v Ulster. Your beloved Ulster. How do you see this one going down at Welford Road?
Come on, Ulster. I'm buoyed by the fact that Leicester have had two bad defeats.
I would be buoyed by that. I thought Leicester would beat you. No, I don't.
Yeah,
Nemani Nandolo running at Michael Lowry. I'm worried for the guy.
Yeah, just put Stockers and McCloskey on the wing. It'd be fine, probably Hendo on the wing as well, just to be sure.
Yeah, bit of extra insurance. Give me Ulster.
I think this is going to be a really good game. I'm actually really looking forward to it. I'm a little bit nervous. I think Leicester. They've got a lot of things in place. To be able to turn it around, namely a very good pack, an experienced pack, massive South African back row, and George Ford, that alone can win you a lot of games. So I am nervous about this. I think it'll be very, very close, but give me Ulster by 3 points.
Ulster by a score.
Ulster,
come on, Ulster.
On to Saturday, let's stick with the Challenge Cup. The Saturday night game is Bath Montpellier. So Zach Mercer against his future employer.
And these teams are so similar.
Yeah, give
They're
me
so
Bath.
Similar.
I mean, Montpellier are full of big names and or coached terribly, and Bath are like Montpellier.
They are. This is the English and French versions of each other.
Yeah,
far more talent than their league position historically justifies.
What's an easier job? Director of Rugby at Bath or Chief Exec at Premier Rugby?
I don't know.
I think Bath under me today could have lost against Wasps. I think we could have done that.
Yes.
And I also think I could have been dismissed from Premier Rugby in the vote of my confidence.
Give me Bath. French teams, Montpellier don't really care about the competition. They don't travel that well.
Bath might sneak this one as well. And their situation at 10 is a concern. As promising as Orlando Bailey is, you wonder how different this things might be right now had Reece Priestland not got injured.
I'm not sure it'd be that much different.
He was playing really well.
He was kicking well.
He was playing pretty well as well because he's got the talent outside him. It's just, he doesn't need to do that much to get Jonathan Joseph or Anthony Watson or Will Muir, who's playing really well.
Will Muir's eggs. How have they got? They've got so many players that I admire.
I'm scared to ask
why, because Byron McGuigan's nickname is Horse.
Yeah.
Will Muir's nickname is Horse. Why are they called Horse?
Because they like to gallop around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great runners, thoroughbreds. Okay.
Good. Glad we sorted that one out. Good.
Yeah.
So we're all going Ulster narrowly. We're all going Bath narrowly.
Yes.
Okay. So to the Champions Cup then. And on Saturday we've got the All-French Affair.
Toulouse-Bordeaux.
No idea. Why don't you pick one for me?
Toulouse.
There you go, Toulouse it is.
Toulouse.
I want to see Toulouse win, so that'll be fine with me.
I think Toulouse will win, but Bordeaux are a very difficult team to break down. And they've got some talent as well. They are no mugs, as Bristol found out.
Untermac v Jalabert.
Yeah.
A tasty little matchup.
The Battle of the French Tens.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. And then on Sunday, the final game, and save the best till last. This is huge.
It is. And I'm going to ask the question, but I assume the answer is no. There are not going to be any fans in La Rochelle, are there?
No, I think so.
Yeah.
More's the pity.
Pretty certain, because that would be even more special having this.
Oh, I say save the best till last. No, it hasn't saved the best till last. The Saturday game will be closer than this. I still think Leinster are going to do a job on
well,
La Rochelle.
But
you got it's the O'Gara Leinster thing is cool.
Yeah, the O'Gara Leinster, but we're fans in, because La Rochelle are obviously very, very well supported. Leinster are incredibly well supported, particularly for big European away days. So this would be an amazing spectacle.
It would be incredible.
The sun coming out as well, April on the west coast of France. This would be an amazing game with fans in the stadium. Unfortunately, we won't get that. I think it'll still be a good game because, like you say, the O'Gara connection. O'Gara is confirmed he's on a 3-year deal.
Taking the helm with Jonathan Gibbs going to Clermont.
Yes. And La Rochelle are a very good team. As JB's beloved Sale found out, to their detriment, they've got a massive, nasty pack, but still with guys like Victor Vito and Aldrete who've got the skill level as well. They've got potency and power in the back line. They are a serious, serious outfit. So I think this will be an awesome game. With all that said, Leinster have just been here and done it so many times before. So give me Leinster. Just Leinster by 3 points.
So we're saying it's going to be Ulster Bath Challenge Cup final.
Yeah.
And a Toulouse
Leinster. The classic.
El Clásico.
Yeah.
But the battle for the fifth star.
Has that ever happened before? As in these two in the final? Maybe in the early. No, not even.
I think so.
Because their period of dominance was the early 2000s like and the.
Yeah, it's like the.
2009 to.
It's like the Greek Empire. And the Roman Empire, they're two incredible periods for those civilizations, but they didn't quite cross over. They never crossed over.
Yeah.
It's like those hypothetical, and I quite like doing this because I'm a bit of a...
Who would win, an eagle or a snake?
No, a bit of a history nerd, and I quite like military as well, but just sort of going, who would have won out of this army or that army? If all things were recalled.
It's all about logistics.
Yeah, all of that jazz.
Just tell me all the guns. Yeah. Oh, talking of which, I am talking to... Can I give a plug to a different podcast? Tomorrow, we are doing Dave Waddington, who was captured in... He served in the RAF and was captured in Iraq. So we're interviewing him.
Wow.
Are they having the services games, actually, this year?
Cool.
Have they had them?
I don't know.
Oh, that's on Pilot Episodes podcast.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. But just because we got to this, I've got my Navy shirt. I've got my Royal Navy rugby shirt. Your Air Force.
All by the way.
And you're wearing sand and
absolutely.
Khaki now.
Yep.
Camo.
Exactly. The Air Force did rather well last year. It was a year before because obviously COVID destroyed it all. But the Army are always prohibitive favourites. Always.
So I'm just looking back for the Leinster-Toulouse final. So between 2008 and 2012, Leinster and Toulouse were in every single one of the finals. So there's five finals in those years. They didn't meet each other.
Wow.
It was Toulouse-Munster, which Munster won. Leinster beat Tigers in the Tuolagi Shane Horgan standoff final in 2009. Toulouse then beat Biarritz. Leinster beat Northampton. And Leinster beat Ulster in 2012. So, out of five finals, they made it every single year in that period, but never against each other.
Incredible stuff.
Mmm.
Oh! Do you know what? I'm going to let Ugo have the last word. Where is he? Where's our boy? Thank you very much for watching and listening. Thank you very much. If you haven't already, hit subscribe. Oh, one final thing. Pick a winner of a shirt.
Oh, yes.
Have you posted them?
We keep forgetting. I've posted one, the other one I'm waiting for.
Which of my shirts are you giving away now?
No, which of our shirts? which of our shirts? And plus, this is for all the wonderful people that support on Patreon. One of the ways we
give back is... Don't make it hurt too much.
So, see, I've got loads of...
We were going to do a... what's it called? A TJ Perenara jersey.
Oh, yeah, take
them all. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, so, Hurricanes in the corner.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But Hurricanes from the Lions year. There you go.
It was a
special moment of Lions year.
Because we were talking about TJ Perenara last week, and then we totally forgot to pick a winner.
Okay, you've got a winner?
We have. Let me just hit return on this. Ooh, we are number 357. Which,
patron number 357.
Well, let me just go down. This is on my list, 357.
Patreon.com/eggchasers. Thank now, you very the much problem for your support. With this. Priority access to live tickets when we can get back out live again.
I'm not going to say anything. So, we do not have, for 357, we do not have a address. We have an email address, but no address. But we can get that.
Well, so we can email for the address.
It is JP. That is Julian Pollock.
Julian Pollock, well, you've got a TJ Perenara jersey. Done. Well played. So, yeah, if you haven't already, go check us out. There's a video of us getting hammered in Romania that's on there, God, right now. Just go and check that out, if nothing else. And, yeah, Twitter, if you're on that cesspit, take a break from slagging off James Haskell and come follow us at Rugby Podcast. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking. And what do you want to say, Hugo, to end the podcast?
Let the boys play.
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.